All right, Tony M., I'm an addict.
Hey, Tony.
I'm very grateful to be here and to be doing this. This is my first time doing something like this. My clean date is February 24th, 2022. The topic is The Steps Offer Us Hope. And I have not gotten through the complete 12 steps, so I'm just going to share on my experience, a little bit about me. I'm the oldest of four. I come from a great family, great parents, was raised in the Catholic Church. I went to Catholic school until I was in ninth grade. I'm from right outside of New Orleans, Louisiana. I grew up, I had a canal and swamp in my backyard. And I guess you could say my family, like maybe a little bit of the wildness or craziness that started from a young age. They would even tell you stories about me, like when I was like 10 years old, they'd come home and I'd have alligators in the backyard in the kiddie pool. And they'd be like, dude, Tony has alligators in here. Like, what is he doing from there? And, when I was in fourth grade, that was the first time I started noticing some things with myself, with tics and obsessions, and maybe other people not able to relate with that. But I began to have to start looking up at the corners of ceilings. I began to have to like start touching walls, counting things certain amount of times. But I share that because that's the first time I've in doing this like process through the steps where it's like fear was taking over my life, and that was my way to control things. And fast forward into college. I was a college athlete. I played baseball at the University of Houston and then finished up at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And when I was done with school, man, I really lost my identity. That was one of the first masks that I had ever put on in my life, is thinking that, you know, that's all I was a baseball player. And during that time frame, that's when using really started to progress with me too. And that was another mass, as I moved to another state and I was trying to people please at that point. And I was the crazy party type guy. And once I was done with school, that was a tough time in my life. It was the early 20s at that point, and I really didn't know who I was. And I had met who is now my future wife at that point, and I met her while using. During this time frame, my using had progressed, and eventually I got to a point to where I checked myself into a rehab. And that was a decision that I made for myself. I was tired at that point, and I wanted to get out of reality. That was the first time that I actually heard of a 12-step program. It was not Narcotics Anonymous. It was another 12-step group, and I have nothing against that at all, but that's the first time that I heard the message. And at that point in my life, though, I don't think that I was ready. I kept asking the question, like, why? Why do they do it like this? Why do they do it like that from here? And but deep down in me, I knew that that was the solution, but I didn't want it to be because I knew that it required work. And shortly after leaving that rehab, I relapsed, and my relationships continued to suffer. Not long after that, I ended up losing my job. After that, my wife left me. She took my daughter with her. She moved into an apartment. 8 months later, she filed for divorce. They delivered the divorce papers to my door, and that's where I knew it was real. And I talked her out of it. My wife will tell you that I'm very good at that and maybe manipulating. And I was like, don't do it one more time. Don't do it. Don't do it. And she didn't, fortunately. And we went to therapy and we tried to start working on things. And in that time, I found some messages on her phone where she was talking to this other guy. And it broke me inside that like I had gotten to this point that she never knew me, like who I really wanted to be. And I felt broken as a man. And shortly after that, I started entering a very dark moment in my life to where I was going through periods of psychosis, and it was so scary in my brain where I knew if something didn't change that I was going to hurt myself or I was going to hurt someone else. And that was the first time in my life that I actually called out to the God of my understanding, but I had no relationship with that God at that point from there. And I did not get clean from that time going forward, but I felt like that was a pivotal moment in my life because I began to start searching for answers on how do I get out of this. And I tried different things. I tried different, you know, mixing different drugs together, taking less potency of this. I went and did ayahuasca a few times. I went down, I paid a bunch of money, I went to Central America. I did another psychedelic called Iboga, thinking that something can change the way that I feel inside of myself and change my brain. And the last time that I did that psychedelic, I did get off of using at that point. And that next about 60-day period, that's the longest that I ever made it. And I thought that I could stay clean by just eating healthy. Well, the fight started happening again in the house. They started escalating more and more from there. And I'm so fortunate. I remember my dad telling me, man, you're going to lose her. You're going to lose her again. You're going to lose your family. And I'm so fortunate. I still have this therapist that's in my life till this day. And this is someone that's in recovery and has been clean for 36 years. And I remember him telling me this story at that point, because like, I could feel myself going back to the relapse. I'd done it so many times before. I knew it was going to happen from there. And I remember him telling me something and him saying, you know, my dad was an alcoholic, and he would drink, and then he got clean, he got sober. And he said that he wasn't working a form of recovery, and he was actually meaner than when he was drinking. And all the kids told him, go back drinking. Go back. We don't want you anymore from here like this. And he said it wasn't until he started working a program of recovery that his life began to change. And that really sat with me at that moment, because I was like, man, I freaking tried everything from here, and I can feel myself going back to this. I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore, and I want to try something different. And that's the first time that I gave Narcotics Anonymous. I came in open-minded. I came into this program. I came in willing. I was taking suggestions. And I was going to meetings that I could relate to what people were saying. Everyone was so welcoming from here. And in the meetings that I kept going to over and over, I kept hearing that the steps were the solution, the steps. And I would hear them almost every single meeting that I would go to. And it took me a little bit, but eventually that I got a sponsor. And and how I got that sponsor, man, like I was like, I don't know how to do this program, but I really want to do this from here. And I remember before going to that, I was praying. I was like, help me to find a sponsor. Like, I don't know what to do. And it was someone that I would see from meeting to meeting from there. And I remember at the end of that meeting, I walked up and he handed me the sponsorship IP pamphlet from there. And I was like, that's it. That's my sponsor from there. And man, I'm so grateful for that, for taking me through this process and these steps so far. And I was about, I don't know, maybe about six months clean. And I remember my sponsor, he lost his job due to addiction. And he got a new job in the same exact field. It was like 7 years later. But he was saying that he was driving over an hour and a half to this job and waking up at 4:30 in the morning. And at that point, like, I still was not working steps, but I was like, to me, that was unfathomable that someone could do that. I was not, if that happened to me at that point in my recovery, I don't know if I could have done that from there. But he kept coming back to meetings and he kept sharing the same message. And I was like, wow, man. And that gave me hope from there. And then my family started telling me, like, man, there's this glow around you that you're changing. And the hope became more and more. And it wasn't until it was about, I don't know, eight, nine months when I started and I began step one. And in step one, like, I admitted that I was powerless over my addiction and that my life had become unmanageable from there. But in that step, you know, before doing that, like, I had to deal with any reservations that were first. And I really think in that time frame, like, I had done everything that I wanted to. Like, the only thing that I can think of, like, maybe if someone died from there, like, I don't know. I was kind of uncertain, but I was like, I was so sick and tired of using. I was like, and I already had money at one point in my life from here. I was like, or I don't think if I lose this from here. I was like, I just want to live differently. That is it from there. And I knew that I was powerless over this addiction. I mean, man, I remember my brother coming home, and I was living with my parents at the time, and he had surgery on his leg, and he had the bottle of painkillers that were in there. And in my head, I was like, man, don't take your brother's painkillers. Like, don't do that from there. But the obsession became so much, and eventually I acted out on it too. And I remember I took four of them from there. And then it felt so good from that point. And I was like, man, don't do it. He might need this. He might need this from here. And the next day I took four more. And then I kept taking them from there. And eventually, before you know it, I took half the bottle. And then eventually he notices and he comes into my room crying. And he comes in and he tells me, like, I don't want you to die like our cousin Ben did. My cousin was taken from this disease of addiction. And talk about being powerless, man. Like, he died from this disease. And I remember going to his funeral, taking the same exact drugs with my cousin that he just died from. And I'm carrying his casket out there. And I'm like, man, like, that's insane. And from there. And so, like, I knew I was powerless over this. And but the thing that took me the longest was, like, that second part of it. The second part of the truth was my life had become unmanageable. I didn't think it was unmanageable because at one point, like, while using, I was a top sales rep in the country. I owned multiple properties. I had all these materialistic things. Like, I thought that I could manage my own life. But then at the same time, man, like, I got myself into rehab. Like, my wife filed for divorce. I was losing my family. I was losing everything that was important to me from there. And, you know, the first thing that we do in this program is we stop using. And that's all I wanted was freedom from active addiction. That's all I wanted was freedom. And I got that. And once I was able to have that second part of being unmanageable, the only thing that I had to do was become open-minded to a power that was greater than myself from here. And I remember doing after step one, my sponsor telling me that you may feel a little bit raw about this. And I didn't understand that at that point. But when I stopped using drugs from there, then when the pain of living became enough, like, I had to seek some form of a power that was greater than myself. And I had to replace it at that point. And, you know, for me coming into this program, like, I was very confused about that at that time. And the whole world, the whole word God, I repelled that whole thing. Even though I grew up in this Catholic church, I had no relationship and I had nothing to do with it from here. But the beautiful thing about this program here is, you know, you can call the God of your own understanding or power greater than yourself, whatever you want. And some people call it's the group, the program, you know, God from there, or whatever you want. And that's the beautiful thing. And I got to decide that from there. And, you know, sometimes, like, even myself, when I know that I'm even, and I think about this, when I'm even in, and I'm in pain, like, it could be just reaching out to another addict from there, or it could be going to a meeting, or it could be getting into my steps, going inside myself from there. And, you know, and then my faith, that was the first time, like, I'd gotten some faith and faith in this program from here. And, you know, turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him going into step three. You know, I turned my life over to the dark force of addiction many times in my life. I thought that I could do life on my own. I thought it would give me more money, more women, more power, more sex, whatever it was. I thought it would give me more of everything from there. And, you know, this step, it doesn't say in there that we made a decision it doesn't say that, you know, we turned our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. It says that we made a decision to do that. And that was one of the first decisions that I ever made in my life. And that's where the God of my own understanding, that's the first time that it actually changed. And from where it was then and it still continues to change from there, but it's how I perceive God. And I remember in that step telling my sponsor and thinking to myself that he was going to judge me. And he was going to judge me in that moment when I was even saying that, but he didn't, man. He was so accepting, and his face, I could see it on his face from there. And it was like, that's where it really gave me that, I don't know, feeling accepted. Like, I can do this and I can make that decision for myself. And, you know, I still, on a day-to-day basis, I do wake up and I try to sit in either a meditation, read the JFT, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. And I ask for guidance. I try to do that to the best I can, but there are times that I do take my will and my life back. And one of those is anger. And I suffered with anger so much in my life. Like, man, like, I can remember when I was little just yelling at my mom. So then she's like, where did that come from? And I don't know what it was. It's almost like an addiction in itself. And especially it was with my wife. Even before coming to this program, that was like an addiction. It was almost like a 2-week cycle. And the fights were so much. Like, man, it was so, it would get to the point to where like I would explode until I couldn't think anymore, and I was all like the people in that it affected around me, and it was literally making me sick. And I'd had family members that would be calling me, and they'd be saying like, "Hey, are you all right?" And I'd be closing the blinds, staying in my own room, not going anywhere for multiple days, and it was making me sick. And that was it was almost like an addiction in itself. And I remember my sponsor telling me, "You can use the 12 steps for anything." And it was when I was about 2 years clean from there that finally kind of made sense, where these anger episodes, they became less and less and less. But eventually it got to one and I was like, man, I'm tired of this. I am so tired of this from here. And I did. I admitted, I went back. It was like the step one from there that I was powerless even over that. And I did this step from the steps from there. And I remember at that point, it was such a feeling to where I turned my will and my life over to to God at that moment. And I was like, I cannot do this. I can't do this on my own from here. Guide me from this. And man, the miracle that I see in my life from that today, and I'm not perfect to where I noticed times where my voice or my tone elevates from that, but where I am at to where I used to be is like, it's a miracle in itself. And, going on to the next step from here is step four. And this took me a long time. It took me almost a year to complete. So where, I was searching for, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And it took a lot of courage. It took a lot of perseverance. There was times where I didn't really stop, but there was times where I'd start writing and I could only write a little bit of a time because it was almost like the pain was too much. But each time before I did it, I wanted to be as honest and thorough as I could. And I would pray before each time for God to give me that ability to do that from there. And, I was trying to get through all the confusion in my life, at that point, and sort through that. And that's what it says to get down in there and to write that. And during this process, I got to see it was so many things, patterns about myself, and learned a lot of the things that I did was out of fear. And I got to see a lot of things, that were out of relationships. And one of the things that happened during that process was I left my step working guide out, and my son had knocked it on the floor and it was open, and my wife found it and she looked at it from there, and I was mad that she read it after. I was mad at first from there, but I can only look and I can only say she was only tempted, and she's like, she read something about me that she didn't like. And 8 months being with me, and she's told me, there's so many things that come up about you that I don't even know from there. And she was just tempted to read it, and I can't be mad at her from there. And she doesn't, and that's my wife. She deserves to know the real me. But in that moment, I invited someone into our home 3 weeks before we were married. And, this was something that she didn't like at all, and we had to go to therapy, and luckily nothing happened at that point, because at that time, that's when Zelleverse became popular, and they wanted a cash payment. I didn't have it, so they freaking left right away. But I put that down because I was like, what was my motive in wanting to do this right before I was getting married a few weeks before this? And the therapist that we were going to, he wanted me to give a whole sexual inventory and a lie detector test, this whole thing that was like this. And I started talking to people in the program, and people were like, man, I don't know, that's not in the program from here. Other people are saying, don't do it. Other people are saying, so I didn't make any rash decisions, but I sat there and I prayed about it. And eventually, and I'm so grateful for this, it was that, I remember it was that Saturday morning from here, and my wife, the argument started, and she's like, I don't know who you are, from this and all this stuff. And I had this burning desire, and I think from my own higher power, I guess. And I was like, you know what, man, I'm going to tell her something from here. And I told her something that I never told anyone until that point. And I told her, and it was something that happened to me when I was younger, and I was so confused about it. I was so confused for so long from there. And it caused me, I felt in a way to go certain directions in my life, and it caused me so much pain to think why, how could this happen from here? And in that moment, to see this woman, to sit there, the crying that I had, the release that I had, it was one of the most beautiful experiences that I ever had in my life. I've never cried like that in my entire life. And she cried, and this woman just held me, and she just loved me. And she just loved me in that moment. And she had something similar happen to her from there. And there was a beautiful experience that came out of that, and that came out of working this program. And I don't know if I ever even would have gotten to that if I would have done it from there. And I'd only have a couple minutes left, and I went immediately into step five, and I had to give that, that admission, and I had to say that to God, myself, and to another human being, and at that point. And I got through there, and with defects, and through step five, I was trying to see these patterns or the motives that were behind this. And when I got to step six, it took me about 4 months to do that. Life was very good at that point. And I don't know if it was just like my way of, like, I was relieved of maybe some pain, shame, anger, guilt. And like, life was very good. And like, there was no pain that was there. And eventually the pain came and I began to work step six. And it says that all we need to do, it says that, all we need for this is willingness. In this step that was here. And my sponsor told me, he said to he gave me a list of all these defects and said, start writing them, and then they're opposites. And I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. Like, it's just like you apply the opposite from here like this. But I start writing them, and I'm like, man, like, I told him, I was like, I have like almost all these from here. And you know, where I'm at right now, that's where I just finished writing those, and I am in step six. And so, you know, I was listening to another addict that was sharing the other day, and he was saying that with step six, that it doesn't say that God removes, he doesn't say that God removes these defects. And I had this vision for myself, like, man, these are all like this, like, to get to this point, to get this to be removed. It says that we became entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And, you know, certain defects that will come up in my life, when those are presented from there, he was saying that you have, like, going back through step one, admitting that you're powerless over that, coming to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity, and then doing step three, turning your will over from there at that point, and doing that over and over. And I was like, wow, man, you keep coming to recovery. And like, for me, something like that kind of made sense. And I was like, I already did that with anger from that. And I was like, wow, it gives me like more, even more hope, like thinking in this program from that point. And so, you know, I guess the goal of the 12 steps is a spiritual awakening. And, I found this new way to live within this program. And I always wanted to do something that was helping other people. I remember telling my dad when I was using, I just want to help people. I just want to help from there. And my sponsor, he tells me, you know, how free do you want to be? And he'll tell you how free. And he says this answer, the solution is in the steps, and to keep going from there. And, I just had this vision for myself getting to step 12 and then being able to reach back to others and then help them through this process for them to find the God of their own understanding, because that's something that I never had in my entire life. And that relationship is beautiful today, and it continues to grow, and it's my source of hope and strength and courage. And, and with that, I'll close and I'll keep coming back. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, my name's John. I'm an addict.
Hey, John.
I'm
glad you're here.
I've been clean since November 1st, 2013. And a friend from my group asked me to speak today. Said the topic was the 12 steps offer us hope, and I'm overly analytical and obsessive and compulsive. So I've been thinking about this shit for like 3 weeks and come up with pretty much nothing. So we'll just go with what it is. But the 12 steps do offer hope. And for me, the hope that they offer is an answer to a hopeless state of mind, right? What I share is from my experience and from the basic text mostly, and how and why I'm not a big living clean person. I'm the blue book and the gold and the green, those are the ones that I was taught to work out of. And hope, I had a conversation with my daughter today. She's 21. She's pregnant. She's about to get married. She doesn't use drugs, maybe just because she's pregnant, but she's never really had the terror that I had. But she's just like me. She's just like me. And we had a conversation today, and we're talking about unmanageability because she takes on 10 times more than she should. She's a hard worker. She's real smart. But she takes on 10 times more than she should, and then she bitches about it, right? And then she says, well, why don't you come fucking help me? And it's like, well, I didn't tell you to do that shit anyway, right? And we're having a conversation about some principles in the program, and I told her, I said, you know, when you learn to identify the problem, you'll start to look for a solution. And that's where it started for me, and that was the hope that I found in the program. Was my sponsor, my first sponsor, picked me up out of nothing, and I was completely in a hopeless state of mind, and he just battered me back and forth for months. Every time I would open my mouth, he would say, it's the problem. You always talk about the problem. You're so negative, you always talk about the problem. And when I was ready, we started working some steps, right? And the way that I was taught that the steps work is that I'm offered a proven, time-tested, progressive way to get predictable results out of life. And see, that's what I was having this conversation with my daughter today. And I was like, why do you think it's such a fucking calculus problem? You know, it's like you chose to get pregnant. You're supposed to get married first if they're getting married in a couple months. It was like, you know, he works away from home. So, of course, you got a bitch about that. But you knew he worked away from home before you got with him, right? And you moved in temporarily with your mom because of where it is. And her mom, I mean, you know, we've been divorced for 12 years. I'm not here to talk about her, but she's not my cup of tea, you know? It's just a lot of chaos over there. And I'm like, you surround yourself in chaos, and then you bitch about being in chaos. And I was thinking to myself, while we were having this conversation, man, it made me choke up, man, because it was where I was. It was where I was. It was that I lived every day. You know, I didn't know other people walked around looking at corners, counting shit. I did that too, man. But see, we identify. And when I came, it wasn't, I was told it's not about the drugs, not about the drugs. I was like, it's fucking about the drugs. The cops think it's about the drugs. The job thinks it's about the drugs. Everybody else thinks it's about the drugs. It's about the drugs. But then after some time, I learned, like you were saying about your dad, like, I can stop doing drugs and just be as miserable as I was, right? And so my story, just in a two-second nutshell, is I got busted by everybody on Sunday. The cops, I'm a nurse. That doesn't look good when you get busted doing drugs. My mom, everybody in 2003. I stayed clean a couple years, went to rehab, and just like, I got this shit. My dad was in AA. I was like, yeah. God grant me serenity, whatever. I went back to the wife that I hated, the house that I didn't want to pay for, the kids that wouldn't shut up. My life was miserable, and so I eventually started using again, right? And in 2013, I was working. I work. Some of us do that. And I was taking a break at work, and I was at a hospital. I'm a nurse, like I said. And I walked down through the lobby, and there was Eugene. I met Christine up here, like, in 2013. She knew my sponsor for a long time, and he had been my sponsor back in 2005, 2006, and I hadn't called him in 4 or 5 years, and I was just like, oh shit, there's Eugene. He's like, how you doing? I'm like, good. And he says, my number's changed, man, here it is if you ever need it again. And at the time, I called him within a couple of weeks, man. Everything was falling apart, man. I lost I didn't go to jail this time. The job didn't find out. But I couldn't go home no more. We hated each other. We just lived in just chaos. Everything was falling apart. Finances, just everything. And for the last year of his life, I worked the steps with him while he was sick, and he eventually passed away. But I was lucky enough to have an introduction to the steps from a sponsor who had something that I wanted, right? And that's it's real important, especially if you're new, that you find somebody that you connect with, because he taught me. He said, man, you're analytical and you want to figure it out. And he said, this will get you from point A to point B. And it started coming with, you know, the 12 step says a spiritual awakening. It doesn't say the spiritual awakening. You know, he told me along the way, he's like, you have all these spiritual awakenings right along the way, man. You know, we get to step 12, and that is a spiritual awakening, is finishing the steps and helping others. But I was taught some real simple shit, like, I don't like saying I'm sorry, right? So stop fucking people over, right? I don't like admitting when I lie, so stop lying, right? I don't want to pay shit back, so I don't want to have my house taken away, my car, you know, well, then pay your bills, right? And like just these real simple principles that got me to a certain point to where my life started to become manageable. I could say in the last few years, I've been through some things without this program. I see it now. I have a different connection. I don't worry about God. I don't worry about that word. I know there's something there, and it's beyond me, and I can't define it, right? And if I stay in line with what I'm supposed to do, I can do things that I never thought were imaginable. But the problem is some of it's real uncomfortable to get there. And I had a sponsor in the beginning who made me feel real uncomfortable. And I made the decision to call him back. I made the decision to listen because, man, he made me feel like shit sometimes. And I remember the first step, you know, I was going through a divorce. I was going through all this shit. And it was like, she got control issues. And he'd just laugh at me. He'd be like, yeah, well, maybe she does, but so do you. I'd be like, well, why is that important? Because we're here talking about you. Right. And that was the simple but effective stuff that I needed to hear. And it led to a point in my life where I have another sponsor now who's like a lot like my first sponsor, very much like my first sponsor. And I've been lucky enough to have two people in my life that have got me there. I had a temporary sponsor in the meantime after my first one died, and we didn't get along too good, but he took me to where I needed to go. And to this day, I've had the same sponsor, I think, now for 9 years. And, you know, the only way you can work the steps wrong is by yourself. And the book says that. And I kind of chuckle when I hear people talk about, you got to work them out of the flat book. You got to do this. You got to do that. Man, whatever works for you. Yeah. You know, and the how and why, the book, The Companion, that goes along with the step working guide is very important in that regard, because there's so many things. Me and my sponsor right now, I haven't went straight through the steps in 5 or 6 years because I got to 4 a couple years ago. We went back to 1. Then we readdressed my amends list. Then I was told that I needed to work on my relationship with God. Then I was told that I needed to start helping others. So we jump around all the time. I've been through the steps 4 times in order, right? But today the steps just work in my life. And my sponsor now is very much like my first sponsor, but he's got a PhD and he thinks a lot and he breaks things down very analytically. And he's told me this. He said, the first 3 steps are about building a foundation, right? They're about building something to stand on. I have to admit that I have a problem, and truly, like that thing about we're not asking God to take away our defects. We're becoming willing to admit that we have a problem. I don't always believe that I have a problem. Sometimes I think I could be fucking arrogant, you know, and I can be a real prick. But I'm willing to listen when somebody says, hey, turn it down, asshole. You know, and that's the thing with the 6th step, too. The first 3 steps help us build that foundation. The first step is I'm totally destroyed. Nothing's working. The second step is there something better? Is there something there that can get us out of this? And the third step is I'm going to hold out my hand. I'm going to take that leap of faith. And I'm going to try to work with whatever that thing is. And then the 4th, 5th, and 6th step are about identifying the patterns and the characteristics that lead us to behaviors that we're not comfortable with. And when you open the flat book, I like the flat book. When you open the flat book and you start the 7th step, it's going to talk to you about, like, because what's the difference between the 6th step and the 7th step? Well, 6th step is identification, and 7th step is leaping into action. In the beginning of the 7th step in the flat book, it says, now we must take action. 7, 8, and 9 are about taking action. I'm going to make up for what I did. I'm going to stop acting like a dick. I'm going to stop lying. And I like how you described the sixth step, because the sixth step was where my first sponsor passed away. And he broke things down to me in a way, maybe because of what was going on. It was very emotional at the time and stuff. But I've always carried the sixth step with me because I had this big awakening then. Everything was broken down. It didn't matter what defect. There was an answer to the defect. And he had me pulling stuff out of a hat for a while, writing stuff in a notebook, looking shit up in the dictionary. It was like, anger is a lack of acceptance. Fear is a lack of faith. Jealousy is an inner discomfort with yourself. Right? There's all these things. Like, every defect has an antidote. And so the seventh step is where we begin to not have our behavior guided by the negative side of that. If I'm angry, well, the seventh step version of my defect of character where I lash out and beat people up is I have to find out what I'm not accepting, right? And when I do that, I was the most jealous person when I got divorced years ago. My wife was cheating on me. She, but that's her deal. That was her addiction. She had this pattern of behavior where she used sex like I used drugs, and she did it to two other men after me that bought her houses. I mean, she had the greatest dudes in the world. You know, anyway, it's not about her. But the point is that defect led to a behavior, and I did the same thing. So here I was, this insecure, jealous dick, you know, when I got clean. And then years later, I'm dealing with arrogance. Right? Like, so I swing one way or the other. It just depends, you know? And then the 10th, 11th, and 12th step are continue refinement. It's having the car and getting the tune-up, right? Those are the ongoing actions that allow me to keep going. And, okay, I got a couple minutes. So I'll say this. So I went from a point of complete spiritual bankruptcy, waking up every morning and looking at the sky before I drove to work every day and just praying that I'd get into a car wreck today. Because my life, I just kill me. I'm too much of a punk to do it myself, but I just can't live anymore, and I just don't know, right? So I decided to take some action. And I remember when I was with that first sponsor that I talked so much about, and he was living kind of like an old folks home, and I was like, Mr. Hip's looking cool, right? And here, I don't have a place to live. I left my marriage. She's living in the house. I'm paying all the bills, and I'm going through this shit while I'm getting divorced. And my son calls me one day, and I was at Eugene's, and that was my sponsor. And I said, I'm going to go outside and talk to my son. I remember it was December. It was cold, and it was rainy. And he says, where are you at? And I said, I'm at Eugene's house. He says, why are you always over there nowadays? What's going on? And I remember it was the first time I felt complete humiliation. And not again. It's just I wasn't out partying, going to a concert, spending money. You know what I mean? Being the egomaniac that I was. I was humbling myself, right? And from that point, I watched him. He progressed. He passed away. Couple years later, I found another group. I wound up, my mother retired. I was an only child. My dad had passed away years ago. And so my mom was alone, and her family's up in Wisconsin. And so she was going back up north a lot to take care of her family. And I'd go back over to La Porte and babysit her house. And I was paying for an apartment I couldn't afford downtown, paying child support, just crazy. I was in debt. My mom said, you're going to come watch the house for a couple weeks? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, why don't you just fucking move back into your old room while you're sitting here trying to pay all this shit off? And talk to my sponsor about it, and he goes, sounds like it's a good idea. Like, you want to get out of debt, right? And I'm like, yeah, I want to go live with my mom. He's like, why don't you want to go live with your mom? Because you ain't going to get no chicks over there or what? I was like, well, yeah. And he was like, how about humility? How about like actually pursuing your goals, right? So I moved back with my mom. I paid all my debt off. My kids, I can honestly say my kids really started to, even though I was a weekend and Wednesday's dad, my kids were really taking after me. You know, they were really starting to follow me. And then a couple years later, my mom was diagnosed with a terminal cancer. I knew what it was. I'm a nurse. And I could tell by some of her symptoms that things were getting bad. And I took care of her for 2.5 years while she passed away from ovarian cancer. And I was able to lay on the ground in her room for 5 days while she was in a coma and finally passed away and just put morphine down her throat. You know, because that's what she wanted. The only thing was she did not want to be in a nursing home.
Yeah.
And I was able to do that for her, man. And it was hard. It was hard, but it was one of the most spiritual things. And I remember talking to my sponsor afterwards, and he was like, "What? How do you view what this is?" And I said, "An opportunity." I said, because, you know, that's just something that he said it was your living amends, you know, and it was something that you were able to do. So afterwards, you know, it was around this time COVID happened and everything, and everybody did Zoom meetings, and I got back into recovery at that time because I was making 2 or 3 meetings a week. But then on Zoom, shit, I was making meetings in the UK at lunch, yeah. And I had a Zoom group that I met every day. I was making like 10, 15 meetings a week. And I met the woman that I eventually married, who's my wife now, a couple years later. She moved from Louisiana over here, and she has 3 kids. I have 3 kids. We bought a place, a new house last year. This year in January, and we have a life that's based on recovery. And I can tell you this, like if they say, if the thing is the 12 steps offer hope, it'd be like, that's some generic shit. What the fuck does that mean? I mean, for me, hope gets confused with fantasy sometimes, because I have dreams and all. They say hopes and dreams, right? Well, those are different things. And hope is that there's a predictable path to an outcome that I'm seeking, right? And in recovery, all I got to do is just do the work, and things just happen. Things just happen, and I can't even imagine where I'd be without the program. And now I understand, like, I used to hear Eugene say, if drugs were the answer, or if drugs were the question, if drugs were the answer, what was the question? Like, what the fuck does that mean? And it's like, at this point in my recovery, and it's been a little while, like, drugs aren't even the deal anymore. I can say that, and it pisses me off that I say that now, because I remember when I was new, I was like, fuck you. I do not want to hear that. It is about drugs, right? But after some time, it's the behaviors. And I can live in recovery and be miserable. And I don't have to do that anymore, man. I'm on my path. I just started a program. I'm finishing my master's degree in nursing. I'm looking at buying some land up north after I get done. And man, I never, you know, anything I want, it's up to me. It's up to me. It's like I blame the whole world. I blame drugs. I blame people, places, and things. On holding the key to the prison that I created for myself, man. And the hope that the steps offer is to give us the key to unlock that fucking cage. And that's the thing is with some time in the program, man, my daughter was saying today, that my little chaos daughter, she said, but Dad, you eat lions for breakfast. And I almost choked up when she said that. I'm like, I'm glad that you look at me like that now. Because I know when you were 3 or 4 years old, when I was trying to get this shit, like, you wouldn't have said that. You would have said, my dad's a bitch. My dad's an embarrassment. That's not my dad. You know, and the thing is we can live by an example to teach other people, man. And it's cool to be able to open up a thing for a convention, and it's really good to be able to reflect on hope in the 12 steps, because I didn't have any hope when I started, you know, and I can honestly say I did not follow the path. I came to the program and I left because it didn't work, and they're fucking each other and they're a bunch of lepers sitting in a circle whining and bitching. And when I came back, there was nowhere else to go. I didn't have any faith. I didn't have anything. I just said, I ain't got nothing to lose. And so I just started doing with this old man who just, he was like a guru to me. You know, he was just like, and he used to say that, I ain't no guru. And you remember, Christine, he used to say that. But he had what I wanted. He was a man who was paralyzed from being beaten in the streets, smoking crack, who walked crippled. He had gross movement on all his legs. He took forever to get anywhere. And I just say this and shut up. And I've been thinking about it lately. He taught me so many things. And one thing he taught me was when he was going for chemo, he knew he was dying. And I had a little Honda Accord, and he had a Nissan SUV. And he tried to get into my Honda Accord one day, and he was like, I'm getting your fucking car again. He was like 6'6", you know, he was a big guy. And so he said, you drive my truck. So I drove him. And, you know, somebody that's looking at death, that's been clean for a number of years. He sponsored tons of people, changed lives. And he's showing courage. And, you know, courage, he taught me, is not doing something without fear. It's doing something in spite of fear. Yeah. And he got into his truck, and everything in his life was symbolic. And he would do these things to remind himself. And I went to adjust the rearview mirror, and there was no rearview mirror. It was an old, clunky truck. And he said, I said, where's your rearview mirror? And he said, what the fuck I need that for? I said, it's a rearview mirror. He said, I don't look back. I don't look back. There ain't nothing back there for me to look at, man. And it's really cool. It's really cool to be here and think of him all these years later and be honestly say that you may not have any hope in the beginning, but if you just trust the process and move forward, you'll look back and see what you really do have hope for. But anyway, man, it's going to be a good convention, so I'm glad everybody came. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.